Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Appreciate you making the show a part of your day, as always. Appreciate you getting up early with us. You're driving in. Be safe out there on the roads. Be safe in general. Be kind to each other. Texans training camp practice schedule continues to unfold. Day three yesterday, day four today. We've got you covered all day long. I'll be out there this morning. I'll be checking in with In the Loop and Clint Sterner in the show in the afternoon. And we've got press conferences galore. Bill O'Brien at 10:20 today. Anthony Weaver and Tim Kelly coming on after lunchtime. Weaver at noon, Kelly at 12:40. And yesterday, practice was outdoors, as I believe it is today. And it was spirited, and guys were back in uniform, and it got chippy at times. Seth, it was fun. Good morning. How are you, my friend?
Oh, was there chippiness?
There was a little chippiness. There was a little chippiness between somebody who just got back in uniform yesterday. Kenny Stills. Ooh. Kenny Stills and Bradley Roby got a little chippy at one point.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the... I'm guessing Kenny Stills thought that Bradley Roby was getting a little too handsy with no officials out there?
Yeah, I'm assuming that's what it was. You know, it was across the field in 11-on-11, but whatever the case, they were not exchanging pleasantries. It was there was a little shoving going on, yeah.
Bill O'Brien talked about it yesterday, about how it's different when you're outside versus in the bubble, and it's true. There is something, as much as you love the air conditioning as a player, there's something about that air conditioning and that bubble that just...
Put you to sleep?
It's like when you're trying to hit a baseball and it's cold out and your hands like kind of ring, and there's a little bit of that element. It doesn't feel as soft when you hit somebody. Like, it doesn't feel like it gets cushioned as much. You get outside and you can really explore the space and lay the wood.
Yeah, Brian said yesterday guys like the grass better too than whatever the turf is in the bubble.
It's just, I mean, I don't know if there's an AstroTurf yet, or excuse me, a field turf, or whichever version they're using that feels better on your legs than really nice grass. And the practice field over there is just super nice,
pristine,
soft ground and grass. Yeah, so it's way easier on your knees for the older guys.
We'll get into a more in-depth dive of practice yesterday and where we're at with training camp, some of these position battles at the bottom of the hour, and we have a nice long segment to do it. But Seth, my big takeaway yesterday, before we get into the Astros last night, who've now won five in a row, by the way. The defense won yesterday. The defense ruled the day yesterday. They played very, very well in the 11-on-11s, a couple turnovers. A little Charles Amenihue pressure on Deshaun Watson off the left side, and then Deshaun underthrows the ball. A.J. Moore makes a pick, and the defensive backs are swiveling their hips and talking trash to O'Brien. It was pretty cool. Yeah,
it's good for a couple reasons. One, you like the defense to, you know, show signs of life with new defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver. But also, I think if the Texans do what they want to do offensively, you should expect a whole lot of hiccups early on, because they've got all this speed all over the place that is brand new, whether it's Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb. And I don't care how much time they've had on Zoom or how much Brandon Cooks is familiar with the terminology. Getting the timing down and getting the relationship with Deshaun Watson, it's going to take a little while. So if they went out there and it was awesome versus the defense, I'd be way, way more nervous about the defense than what typically happens this time of year, is that the offense is a little bit behind the defense because offenses are just more complex.
And I think what people should understand, too, is they are, and O'Brien has been very upfront about this, they're load managing a lot of these veteran guys heading into the season. And what that's meant for the offense is that Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks especially have been out there almost zero in the 11-on-11s that we've seen. You know, they're doing walkthroughs and things like that we're not privy to. We as the media are seeing just the practice fraction of what goes on in the building over there. We're not seeing all the film and the walkthroughs and everything else. But in the stuff that we've seen, the 11-on-11, which is the true stuff that looks most like real football, Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller, they're suited up. They're in pads. They're participating in practice, but they haven't been participating much at all in 11-on-11. Cobb was in there some yesterday, so he had at least a little bit of a veteran presence. But mostly, Deshaun's had the first-string offensive line and tight ends in front of him the whole time. But mostly, in terms of guys he's been throwing to, it's been Chad Hansen. It's been Stevie Mitchell. It's been Kiki Cutie. It's been the running backs. David Johnson has been getting a lot of work getting the ball thrown to him, and there were a couple instances yesterday where after certain plays, Deshaun, you could see Seth Deshaun walking over to him and sort of making the hand gesture like, no, go this and then cut it off this way. You know, like still sort of getting used to some of his new teammates.
Deshaun always does look a little bit like a sign language interpreter.
Yeah.
Especially after bad plays, if you notice, he kind of coaches guys.
That's what he was doing.
He pantomimes guys
afterwards.
So that's what he's doing. And I wonder, too, when you get reports is from guys like you, you're one of only 10 people allowed out there. And this is what happens in training camp is coaches work packages. And they work, you know, they break things up into blocks. Today we're going to work on this. Today we're going to work on that. And maybe these last couple days it's just been time for David Johnson to get incorporated in the running back passing game. And then at some point we'll start to see, okay, we're going to work the slots and we'll see more of Randall Cobb. But that's sometimes a more manageable way to kind of get guys all on the same page in particular facets of the game.
We'll get into the Astros in the second segment of the show. I think as long as we're talking about the Texans here, there was a bit of news yesterday that impacts the Texans. To what degree, we'll see. But they opened the season, Seth, in Kansas City against the Chiefs. And we know that the Texans are not going to have fans in the stadium when they open the home portion of their schedule in Week 2 against the Ravens. In Week 1, they travel to Kansas City, and Kansas City announcing yesterday, and I guess this stuff is all subject to change depending on the coronavirus, but as of right now, Kansas City is planning on letting 22% capacity into the stadium for the season opener. They're gonna allow single ticket sales to season ticket holders based on tenure. They're gonna sell these tickets in little pods of six, where you can sit with people that you know. They're gonna allow tailgating, but only with the people only outside the back of your car, and only with the people who are in your pod. So it's a very, very tightly managed kind of thing. But I think if you're a Texan fan, the only thing that matters is what's the decibel level going to be in the stadium. If you were a player on the Texans right now and you heard that Kansas City was going to have 22% capacity in the stadium, would you be concerned at all about at least a little bit of noise for the Chiefs? Or would there be part of you going, okay, this is at least going to feel like a real football game?
I think the second part. I'd feel like, oh, okay, this will be fun, especially when I'm watching NBA games and baseball games with nobody at all there. It's going to be nice to have some people out there. This might be actually the best-case scenario for a player. If you're going to be visiting, I'd say with 22%, I don't worry that it's going to feel like an antiseptic environment. It's just going to be fun. But for an offensive player, it's not going to affect the snap count. It's not going to affect Deshaun Watson, I don't think.
Yeah.
Now, when you go to any football game, it's rare to see, I mean, the really loudest people, I would say, are 20% of the fans, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So, but I think the cross-section is going to be the same. So only 20% of this 22% is probably going to be all that vocal. So now we're looking at, what, 5% of a normal stadium? So I don't think the noise is going to be an issue.
Even if they were the 22%, even if they were the loudest 22% of fans in the entire greater metro Kansas City area, at a normal football game, it's not like the other 78% are sitting there like mutes saying nothing the whole time. You know what I mean? Like there's ambient noise. They're talking. They're cheering or booing to some degree. I think the noise is going to be a big non-factor. I'm with you. I actually think this is not a terrible thing for the Texans at all. I think it's actually a better case scenario than if you're walking into the weird situation for the first time ever of a totally empty stadium.
I wonder if we haven't really gotten any clarification from the NFL about whether noise is going to be piped in yet or not, have we?
I haven't seen anything.
So that's, I guess that's one other factor. I mean, maybe then especially if they're allowed to augment their crowd noise, then it's going to be like that, whether there's going to be noise issues, whether there's fans in the stands or not, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess what I would point out to some who, may not be aware, a lot of people have been watching these NBA broadcasts and the MLB broadcasts where there's been sound piped in on the broadcast. There's not sound being piped into the arenas. You know, in the NBA, in the bubble, they're playing in just very, just very quiet arenas where you can hear everything. The noise that you're hearing is stuff that ESPN or AT&T Sportsnet is piping in.
That's why when they show the replay of Greinke calling his own pitches. It's a lot. It's super easy to hear everything.
Yeah, it's like you're doing it down the hallway at work. It's the same thing. All right, we are off and running on a Tuesday. Day four of Texans practices today. I'll be out there. COVID test at 8:45 today, people. I still have a clean sheet, so that's good. We'll have Bill O'Brien at 10:20 during In the Loop. In the Loop's got three press conferences today. Bill O'Brien, 10:20, Anthony Weaver, noon, Tim Kelly at 12:40, and I'll be checking in with them right after practice, probably around 11:30 or so. They've got Wade Smith in for John McClain today as well. So they've got a busy show, John Lopez and Landry Locker. The Astros get another win last night, five in a row, and man, what a pleasant surprise this area has been. We will talk about it next.
Pitching staff did a great job. I mean, Belak, you know, continues to impress. You know, like he went into the well, he pitched six today, and he'd only gone five prior to that. You know, Rayleigh came in, did a great job. James came in, did a great job. And then Taylor, you know, got his first save. It adds to the confidence of these young men. You know, the more they do it at this level, you know, the more confident that they become. And so, you know, we're putting them out there, and they're doing the job.
So, Seth, it's really just how they drew it up on the chalkboard last night, you know, against one of the best hitting teams in baseball, the Colorado Rockies. If you want to go scrape out a 2-1 win, it's really exactly how they drew it up on the chalkboard before the season. Verlander pitches seven innings, hands it over to Presley, who hands it over to Osuna. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. It's Belak who hands it over to Brooks Raley, who then hands it to Josh James, and then it's closed out by Blake Taylor. I am going to say this, and I know it's only 22 games into a 60-game season, but by God, Stromy still has it, man. Brent Strom still has it.
Strom, oh, by the way, I meant to bring this up yesterday because Ocho has been railing against Lance McCullers' pitch selection. And I think part of McCullers getting back on track, he started to veer off a little bit, and he pulled himself back on track so far this year, was Brent Strom saying the other day, hey, Lance needs to really rely on his curveball more. And it was the last pitch that Lance had been working on as he was coming back from rehab, which makes sense, right? He was trying to work his changeup, and he knew he could trust old reliable. But it wasn't quite the same. Now he's got it back to the same, so he's going to go back, I think, probably to – I don't think it's going to be an even split 33-33-33 between Lance's pitches. And that's all because of Brent Strom, just figuring it out, being patient with him, and getting Lance looking back a lot more like he traditionally does.
Five-game winning streak now, Seth, which in a 60-game season and considering where the Astros were just a week ago, is just – I can't overstate it. It's just a huge deal for them to be able to win five in a row with Verlander still out, Osuna done for the year. And these five games, look, it's not like they've been facing the Yankees and the Dodgers these five games, but we'll take whatever we can get. And regardless, these are still major league lineups. Seattle kind of barely, but still, stay with me. the five-game winning streak has been San Francisco, three against Seattle, and then last night, Colorado. That's a legit lineup. I know they're not in Coors Field. They'll get that opportunity later this week. But they've given up 1-1-1-2-1 in those five games. That's six runs in five games for this pitching staff. And a lot of the guys carrying the load are got Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Brandon Belak last night, the guys out of the bullpen like Blake Taylor, Rayleigh, who they picked up off the scrap heap. Good for James Click, his first pickup as general manager. Rayleigh has been a real find in these setup type of innings for them.
This is where it's starting to get a little bit nerve-wracking with these young guys and in the bullpen, right? With all your veterans either gone in free agency like Will Harris or injured. They're 10th in bullpen ERA right now, which is it started to drift, but they've reined it back in. They're 5th in overall ERA for pitching. So, I mean, there's the Dodgers and the Indians are just absolutely dominating pitching so far this year. But it's not nearly the source of stress for me and worry and like, oh, I woke up at 3 a.m. and now I'm thinking about Josh James and I can't go back to sleep. I haven't lost sleep over the Astros bullpen in at least 4 days, Sean, 4 days.
Yeah, no, Seth, look, and the starters have been great too. Richard Justice tweeted this out in the last 10 games. This is going into last night, so the numbers only got better last night with Belak, but this is going into last night. The last 10 games, Astros starters an ERA under 2, 1.89, and they went 5-plus innings with less than one earned run given up in 7 of those 10 starts. Those are incredible numbers.
Yeah, and look, Belak hasn't let up. I don't think he's let up more than two runs in a game yet.
No, he's been awesome.
He's not like he's going seven innings every single time. But, boy, his approach and his maturity reminds me so much of just how mature Lance McCullers were. They're different temperaments, you know, on these guys. But Bielak has leadoff walks in three of those innings last night, and it never frazzled him.
Yeah.
And he talked after the game about how he knew that what a challenge it was going to be versus the meat of this lineup, and he was ready for it, and he prepared for it by visualizing the lineup. And he just he's probably the guy that I feel the most in terms of what his floor is going to be. I don't know exactly. Obviously, I have no idea in hell what Josh James is going to be at this point. But with Bielak, I feel like, okay, he's going to make it in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's going to be, but he's going to make it in Major League Baseball. He approaches the game like a professional.
Yeah, the only run he gave up, the only hit he gave up was the home run. It was a solo home run to Story. And even on that one, you mentioned the walks. He had four walks, and Dusty talked about how he had to kind of pitch around his own mistakes early in innings and things like that. Even on that one, Seth, Story got called. Story had a ball four that he wanted, didn't get called. You kind of showed up the umpire a little bit, and then gets back in the batter's box and hits a home run. It was funny because Todd Callis is like, man, he probably would have rather given up the walk at this point than had to throw one more pitch to him, Bielak. But Bielak was great. I think the bigger concerns for this team now, Seth, is you talk about how, man, I'm not really losing sleep over the bullpen. The pitching's been really good. The big things right now are, obviously, is Jose Altuve ever going to get his groove back? He was sixth in the batting order last night per his request over the weekend. We haven't really talked much about that. To me, the bigger concern is this Yordan Alvarez sore knee issue. Dusty gave an update on Alvarez last night.
We'll probably hear something, you know, in the morning before we go to, you know, on the road. And so we're hoping for, you know, decent news. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what the news is going to be. So we just have to wait till tomorrow.
MRI negative on Yordan Alvarez, but the knee's still sore.
You know what I blame, Sean, here? I blame the baseball gods basically mocking the requests of all Astros fans, where one of the things that Jake Kaplan, who writes for The Athletic, had asked going into the weekend was, hey, with Brantley kind of banged up and Yordan coming back, how are you going to get them both in the lineup at the same time? Then lo and behold, oh, they're both gone. Brantley's on the IL and Yordan is injured. So thanks for that, baseball gods.
Right, you know, it went from how are we going to get both of these guys in the lineup to how the hell are we going to get one of these guys healthy to get him in the batter's box? This Yordan thing concerns me, Seth. It doesn't even concern me as much within 2020. Like, I think 2020 is just going to be weird, and they're going to have to cobble something together. I don't think they're winning the division. We'll have to wait and see. I'm not Chicken Little Sky is falling on this. I think they make the postseason, and I'm still enjoying the season. In some ways, it makes, you know, some of these injuries make for really interesting puzzle pieces, and Dusty having to do some things here and Strom having to do some things here. I'm more concerned about this Yordan thing being something long-term, because soon the Astros are going to reach a stage where they're not going to get to keep everybody. And Yordan being cheap labor, you know what I mean? Yordan being a guy who is under some degree of cost control for the next 5-6 years is going to be something that is going to be crucial to keeping this team competitive through the next wave of what we hope is a championship window.
That's where Yordan, in so many ways, I'm almost starting to feel about him like he might as well be Yuli, where he's getting up there in years. It feels like he's got an old man body.
Yeah.
You know?
Or at least knees, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess in some ways it might be a blessing, because maybe it keeps his arbitration numbers manageable. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's kind of dinged up over these first couple of years that he's up here, maybe by the time he hits arbitration, he'll have his body worked out, body of work, or he'll have his body figured out, and he'll start producing well above and beyond his body of work, just because he hasn't been able to play that many games, which happens. Sometimes guys just, they need time to figure out. Well, remember, we saw this with Yuli. Those guys don't play nearly as grueling a schedule in Cuba as they do when they get to Major League Baseball. And maybe with Yordan, at least part of it is just figuring out, okay, playing the way they did in the minors and in Major League Baseball, just how many games they play, how to pace in his body and get it right for the entire season.
New names flashing at Texans camp yesterday, and a drill that I loved, but it has Seth Payne a little triggered about players on the offensive side of the ball. We'll get into a deep dive. My bullet points on Texans day three of practice yesterday are next. All right, day three of practice was yesterday. Day four today. Practice starts at 9:30. Bill O'Brien will his press conference will be on In the Loop at 10:20. Anthony Weaver, noon. Tim Kelly at 12:40.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Seth.
I'm feeling the same thing I felt last year, but I'm not saying it out loud. I think this is a new Bill O'Brien.
Okay. I'm glad you said that. We'll get into practice in just a second. So yesterday, I'm doing my daily routine. I went to practice. I did my call into In the Loop. I did my post for sportsradio610.com. If you want to get the super-duper detail on what happened at practice yesterday, go to the website, sportsradio610.com. Brandon Scott was out there as well yesterday, so he's got some content up there as well. But I'm walking the neighborhood, and I've got my AirPods in, and I'm listening to Clint Sterner in the show, and I'm listening to the first segment, the 2 o'clock segment, and I hear Clint, who, you know, has not covered Bill O'Brien nearly as in-depth as you and I have over the last few years. And I hear Clint talking about, you know, this could be a new Bill O'Brien. You know, this could be, you know, Bill O'Brien seems real comfortable in year two as general manager. And I'm saying to myself, Clint, be careful. Just be careful is all. And I enjoy Bill O'Brien, and I enjoy Bill O'Brien in training camp. And you're right, he does mirror a lot of what he saw last year. But Seth, you're right, you and I were saying these same things last year. And then he had a few, you know, tea kettle or teapot Bill O'Brien moments during the year.
Yeah.
We got to be careful not to get sucked in by the training camp zen.
The thing about O'Brien is, I think he knows he's got a temper.
Of course he does,
right? Like the best was at the draft when whatever the hell happened with the Jonathan Greenard pick was when it looked like he said something like, "That's your pick, Jack," and he got up and angrily stormed off. I loved his son just sitting there, just kind of like, didn't faze him one bit.
Oh, like a statue.
Dad's just going off. But it didn't look like he was, you know, his son just looked calm, cool,
yeah,
and collected. He didn't look nervous or anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like in our house, we call that Wednesday.
I honestly, I think that's a good sign for maybe how I think O'Brien at heart in 98% of the time is like a pretty affable guy. It's just that 2% of the time that he snaps. Whereas like in my household, when that happened, I got nervous. I was like, and I don't know, maybe O'Brien's kid is just tougher than me, but I think my dad was just more erratic on the reg, where O'Brien's not erratic. He's just like every now and then he's going to lose his temper.
So you're not going to say it, but are you thinking it?
That it's a new Bill O'Brien? No, I don't think it's a new Bill O'Brien
okay,
at
gotcha,
all.
Gotcha.
Okay. Last year I thought maybe Jack Easterby had kind of been the Bill O'Brien whisperer or something. And I think maybe Jack Easterby thought he was. Now Jack Easterby understands that O'Brien's a wild stallion who cannot be tamed.
They spend a lot of time together. We were getting COVID tested on Sunday. That was a day there was no practice. We were getting COVID tested. The media was, and we were standing in line. It was really funny, actually. We're standing in line 6 feet apart, getting ready to go in the trailer to get COVID tested on Sunday morning. And O'Brien and Easterby pull up in a golf cart by the COVID trailer where we're all standing. And O'Brien, jokingly with a big smile on his face, driving the golf cart, says, let's see, I want to run over him, not him, her, no, him, yes. It was pretty funny. Like he's good natured about it.
That sounded good, Sean, but when I put it in a transcript and put it out on the web, it's going to look a whole lot worse for Bill O'Brien.
I know, do not. Bill O'Brien desires vehicular manslaughter on Houston media. Yeah, exactly.
As Bill O'Brien sped by the media pool.
Yeah, picking and choosing which ones he was going to cripple. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so practice yesterday, and Ben, can I get some mood music for a little NFL? Yes. I remind all of you that I am one of 10 media members allowed at practice. I'm the only radio personality at practice, so I feel a tremendous responsibility to get this right, what I'm about to tell you. And I will tell you that I think I'm pretty spot on with my observations here. I think I am. Well, I'm going to start with just news first. Kenny Stills, Dylan Cole, and Isaiah Coulter, the rookie wide receiver, all back at practice yesterday, Seth. And I know Cole was a guy you were a little bit concerned about just because he had been, and the team had been saying all the right things about his knee, but you brought up an article that you had been quoted in several years back after you had surgery on your ACL saying, no, all good, I'm good, I'm fine, and yada, 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 you needed more surgery on your knee.
Yeah, I was hooked up. I had a I had antibiotics running in a tube directly into my heart at that point because everything was not fine. So anytime a guy on ACL goes in the PUP to start the training camp, I get a little bit nervous. This coaching staff has been pretty careful historically with guys coming off of major injuries, and they really, I think you put them on PUP for one because you can add an extra roster player there while those guys are taking their time. But also, I think it's almost as a way of like locking yourself in a room if you're a werewolf. You don't want to be tempted to use a guy too much, so you just put him on that PUP and be sure there's no temptation for him to jump in if somebody gets injured or something.
He was back yesterday. He looked good. He's moving around. He's doing drills. So Dylan Cole back. Kenny Stills, as I mentioned earlier, he was back. They're working him in slowly, but he was doing some drills. Isaiah Coulter is interesting, Seth, and this leads me into my second point from practice. There are a lot of backup wide receivers who are getting activity in camp because they're really taking it easy on Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks, and to a lesser extent, Randall Cobb and Stills. So guys like Chad Hansen, guys like Stevie Mitchell are getting a lot more work than I think they might get in a normal training camp. Before I get your thoughts on that, just O'Brien here real quick on the young wide receivers.
You know, a lot of those guys are getting reps because we are managing some of the other guys, you know, like Will and Brandon and Randall and Kenny. So you look at a guy like Chad Hansen. He's had a really good training camp. I mean, he's in the hunt here. You look at a guy like Stevie Mitchell, had a touchdown catch today. You know, Isaiah Coulter and Tyler Simmons, they're coming along. They're working hard. They're trying to get better. They're a long way off, though. It's just hard for a rookie right now. But, I think when you look at those guys, also the other guys, Kiki Coutee's had a really good camp. DeAndre Carter's very solid player. So it's a very competitive position. It's going to be a tough conversation relative to how many you would keep. And on the 53, but all those guys are working really hard.
I think that, Chad Stanley, that's the second time Chad Stanley's been Chad Stanley was a punter back in my day. So Chad Hansen, that's the second time that O'Brien's mentioned him unprompted, right?
Third time.
Oh, third.
It was two going into yesterday,
time.
And he mentions him again, yeah. Now, granted, he did wind up mentioning everybody on the wide receiver depth chart in that particular quote. But Hansen
was mentioned first.
He was mentioned first, and look, I'll tell you, he has looked good in camp.
Yeah,
Chad Hansen.
I think also, and I wonder if maybe part of these guys getting so many reps isn't just that they want to give the older guys an easy ramp up, but that there are no preseason games, there are no inter-squad scrimmages. They've got to get as many looks at these guys as possible to really genuinely figure out who do we want to keep around. It's going to be really hard. And you know, frankly, I think it's a fair criticism of Bill O'Brien that he hasn't done a great job assessing his roster going into week one. You look last year after week one, guys got cut. Guys who are starters, Aaron Colvin was still starting. He wasn't good enough to start. I think that 2 years, 3 years ago, they overestimated how good their offensive line was. So that's a real crucial test for them this year. How well do they actually evaluate their own roster?
It's a competitive position at the back end wide receiver, Seth. I do wonder if Hansen and then Coulter, who didn't do much at practice yesterday, you know, didn't flash a whole lot, but he is somebody who just watching him, you know, just watching him go through drills, he pops just because of the physical traits. Look, he got drafted out of Rhode Island. So obviously he has some physical traits that they saw fit to draft him, because it certainly wasn't the level of competition he was playing at, dominating at the FCS level at Rhode Island. He's a bigger kid. He's a little wiry. He could use a little more bulk, but he's got him and Hansen are bigger guys compared to these other guys. And I just wonder that if, and we know that there's also, in addition to those four that he named, either Carter or QT are going to make the team because one of them is going to be returning kicks. So you just wonder if they're going to want maybe somebody with a little more size on the roster just to kind of round out the wide receiving core. Not that Hansen or Coulter would see a ton of playing time right out of the chute or at all. They may be inactive on game days. But I do wonder if just those traits give them a leg up in that battle for a roster spot.
Yeah. Well, and Coulter just being a fifth-round pick gives them a big leg up.
True.
I'd be highly surprised if Coach Bill O'Brien argues with General Manager Bill O'Brien about his draft pick. And what's, of course, then, you know what, maybe O'Brien is more likely to cut a draft pick now than in the past, because GMs tend to be pretty attached to him. And sometimes the coach wants to get rid of a fourth-round pick. The GM's like, hell no, we trust our process. O'Brien might say, all right, no, I don't like this guy. Not Coulter, necessarily, but any draft pick.
Bigger practice squad, 16-man practice squad. And I don't think Coulter would be a guy you'd be in danger of losing to another team. You know, if another team takes him, they've got to put him on the 53. So I think Coulter could be a guy they stash on the practice squad. We'll see. I mentioned earlier, defense ruled the day as we go through day three of Texans training camp practice. Defense ruled the day. Interceptions by A.J. Moore of Deshaun Watson. Cornell Armstrong with a pick in 11-on-11 of A.J. McCarron. Both really nice plays. Charles Omenihue had a good day with some pressure. O'Brien was asked about jawing with the defensive backs on the team. When those DBs were making plays, the first guy they looked over at and started jawing with was the head coach. It was pretty funny. O'Brien enjoyed it.
Yeah, they like to jaw back and forth with me. That's good. That's good banter, though. That's training camp. That's fun. I think that was Keon Crossan. He always has something to say. He's got a lot of great energy. He's got great energy every day. And so, yeah, no, I think it's fun. I mean, I think that it was good to be out on the grass, too. I mean, I think practicing on the turf, you know, that can wear on you a little bit. So I think it was good to be outside. I think we'll keep it that way. In fact, I think for you guys, we may move this to, you know, somewhere around 9 a.m., 9:15, because I think it's better that way for our schedule and probably for your schedule. So, yeah, I think it's it was good. The guys came today with a lot of energy.
So that's O'Brien on the defensive back. Seth, I know when you mentioned Keon Crossan's name, I saw you smile. I did not get a chance to chat with Keon Crossan in the middle of drills yesterday because it was outdoors. There's that proximity in the bubble. In the bubble, we're literally standing like right next to the defensive backs when they're going through drills, but I do have my Keon Crossan mock assessment ready to go.
Because Keon Crossan had come up to you and asked you what you were writing in your notebook.
Twice,
right, yeah. So you're kind of forming a little rapport with Keon Crossan, at least in the bubble.
Yeah, he walked
That's
over.
That's your special place.
In a bubble, I was taking notes, and during a drill, when his rep was over, he walks over and he looks at my notebook. He goes, "What are you writing on those notes?" And I said, "I'm writing haikus." And he laughed. He thought that was funny. And then he walked over the next day. He's like, "How the haikus coming?" And I said, "Pretty good." So I actually have a page in my notebook ready to go for when we're in the bubble next. And all it says in big letters at the top is Keon Crossan. And then I've got three checkboxes: tough, smart, and dependable. And they're all checked off. So I'm going to show him. Those are going to be my Keon Crossan notes for the next time he comes over. Yeah.
You know what you should do, though, is also have a haiku at the ready.
Keon Crossan,
TB Flossin, something like that. I don't know. I don't know how the haiku works.
575, baby, 575. Yeah.
I know the haiku isn't nearly as bad as you have to have a number of syllables, but you don't have to make it rhyme. I feel like that's that sets you free to do whatever you want.
Let me ask you something. You played with Anthony Weaver here for a year. He was your teammate, and I think Weaver is a guy who is always viewed as very stoic, very calm, very measured. Almost like a Morgan Freeman type, you know, when he does a press conference. His voice is very soothing. He's not soft-spoken. I think his voice is very impactful, but he's not a guy who gets super animated, it would seem. He was letting the F-bombs fly at practice yesterday. There were certain points during practice where he was not happy, to where I'm going, holy crap, that was Anthony Weaver. And I know you played with him for a year. You never were there when he was a defensive line coach. And we never paid much attention to him as a defensive line coach because you focus more on the players, the coordinators, and the head coach. This defense does seem to be, at least in these few practices, have a little more energy in practice, a little louder, a little more kind of, you know, vocal and energetic after big plays and stuff like that. Seth, I think Anthony Weaver's personality, at least from what I saw yesterday, is going to be very different than what Romeo Crennel probably was, more grandfatherly. Yeah. Is that something that will show through in the personality of the defense?
I think it could. You know, it's interesting. Everybody has ideas about, like, what a personality of a defense should be or how guys should behave. And every team is different and every coach is different. But I do think there's something to be said for sometimes on teams where you got a bunch of good guys, you know, where Bill O'Brien wants a lot of high-character guys, sometimes there's not as much energy on those teams. Like, sometimes there's just not as many, like, jackasses that are going to be spouting off about anything that make life interesting. And you want a certain balance there. So sometimes having a coach that's more energetic or has got more or is just younger or whatever can be a good counterbalance to that. And I think, yeah, maybe, like, Wade Phillips. Look, Wade Phillips is as laid back as they come, but Wade Phillips has always had some live wires on his defense, too. You go to the Rams, and Wade just doesn't care. Like, he encourages guys to show personality. So I think maybe Weaver will be good in some of those respects. Like, I don't like to put too much into that stuff. I think there's some units that are really quiet but still really good and play like they've got their hair on fire. But for whatever it's worth, if you're one of those people that says there needs to be more of an edge, yeah, I think Anthony Weaver might be the right, more of a good blend for this particular defense.
Yeah, yesterday he sure was. And there's no, and they played better after he got kind of up in their collective face that way. They played better. They had the run of the 11-on-11 yesterday. Seth, next observation from training camp practice yesterday. This is not a, this guy made a big play, that guy made a big play. This is just something that as I'm standing there early in practice and the offense is kind of lining up in their different sets against air. I'm not going to say what formation they were necessarily lined up in. I don't think it's a big secret. This combination of players is going to be out there quite a bit. But it's just one of those things as I'm watching that 15 and 13 and 18 and 25 were all lined up out there together. I'm looking, I'm going, holy crap, that is a lot of speed on the field. I got a little tingly. I was very excited seeing 15, Fuller, Cooks, Cobb, and Duke Johnson lined up out there. Just it was against air, but I'm going, someday this won't be against air. It'll be against opposing defenses with number four pulling the trigger.
I was listening to one of the Pro Football Focus podcasts, and they do, they've got some bright guys over there. It wasn't Neil. Anyway, Sam Monson and the big tall guy. But they brought up a stat in terms of like the 40 speed of the individual wide receivers on the Texans is one of the fastest in the league. Mm-hmm. And it just, look, does that mean a whole hell of a lot if you don't produce? Of course not. But it's just way more speed than they've had, I think, the entire time Bill O'Brien is here in terms of the entire composition of their wide receivers.
It doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot if that's all you can do is run vertical.
Right.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like the 4-3 speed doesn't really, by and large, doesn't mean anything if these guys can't use that speed to get open in the middle part of the field. And I think Fuller and Cooks are really, really good, maybe even a little underrated as far as their ability to get open and work the middle of the field. They're both pretty tough for their size, and they're both very, very smart route runners.
Yeah. The other thing O'Brien talked about yesterday, we're not supposed to talk about formations, but Bill O'Brien specifically brought up their 13 package, which is where there's three tight ends on the field,
mm-hmm.
which I feel like that's like Bill O'Brien's fantasy dream. Like other men might have dreams about other topics, but Bill O'Brien dreams of having three tight ends on the field at the same
time.
That's
one of his categories.
Yeah, which he's done at times. But I think, look, right now you've got four different guys to choose from that are hopefully all NFL caliber tight ends. If Kyle Waring plays up to his physical potential, you could really put some offenses in a bind out there, because Kyle Waring's got genuine vertical speed, I think, that can really test the defense. So if you go out there with three tight ends and the defense is loading up versus the run, you could still unleash the pass on them.
Other rapid-fire observations from yesterday at practice. This is just sort of a quick one. Jack Easterby, definitely the most efficient high-fiver, butt-tapper, and chest-bumper out there.
You know, I was thinking, Sean, I know he's got a lot of energy and he does all those
solo clapper as well. He's big into the solo clap.
And I listened to, the solo clap? Just, like, how's that?
Just
like
by
one
him,
clap?
Just by himself, just clapping, getting pumped up, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Easterby, yeah.
This is so far, though, I'm going to bring up my negatives on the scouting report for Jack Easterby.
Okay.
I listened to an interview with him yesterday with John and Mark, and it was very, very good. But these would be my concerns. One, we know that he's a horrible tamperer. Like, because not only did he get it caught tampering, allegedly, but he didn't actually pull off the tampering.
0-for-1.
Two, potentially a horrible Zoom drafter. We talked about it just a little while ago. Bill O'Brien was screaming it.
Potentially.
Potentially. We don't know exactly what happened there, but Bill O'Brien did not seem pleased with whatever the hell was happening on the Zoom call.
Right.
And he did not seem pleased with Jack Easterby. And then I'm going to say this. He's a horrible resume proofreader, because when he first was hired by the Texans, I don't know if this was a glitch in whoever wrote the article or whatever, but they originally said, hey, he was the assistant GM for the Jaguars. And I called up some people in Jacksonville, and they were like, who the hell's Jack Easterby? it was eventually corrected on the website. So I think that what I'd say is, however, that potentially might have been bad proofreading in the press release on somebody's part. But given Bill O'Brien's connection to George O'Leary, I don't think that's something we can be messing around with.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, that's that strikes deep at my heart. There's a Notre Dame connection to that.
So I like a lot of the things Jack Easterby is doing, but let's not forget the negatives here. If we're going to go the positives and the negatives, we got to think about the concerns here.
All right, let's not bury the lead. This is my last observation. Let's see what we can squeeze in here. My new favorite drill, Seth, the jam at the line of scrimmage drill between defensive backs and wide receivers. Yeah. It's like the Oklahoma drill for wide receivers and defensive backs. It's a lot of fun watching those two go kind of, you know, head-to-head with a little bit of contact at what is normally a finesse position. I enjoy it very much.
The only objection, I like those two, and it's really good work. The objection I have to it is when that stuff's put on the internet, and I would say the same thing goes with one-on-one pass rush drills at times, the guy that games the system and cheats a lot of times gets nothing but love on the internet. Because I saw somebody at the Texans practice yesterday. I didn't recognize who the receiver was, but he just ran completely laterally. Like, would have been, it basically would have been like running for the Gatorade bucket. And then he got free, but the defensive back won.
Yeah.
Because the defensive back didn't even have to barely put his hands on him, and the kid ran. But then, you know, the kid ran completely laterally and then cut up field. And I see in the comments, like, whoa, look at that speed. Like, no, that's exactly what the defensive back wants him to do. And then, because what happens in Oklahoma drills sometimes, too, is if you're doing it with a running back, the running back that runs outside the cones, cowardly move, I don't know. Are they allowing Oklahoma drills in Texas anymore?
I don't know. I've not seen any. I'm not sure.
I bet there's some coach out there. If they've been banned, there's some coach out there that's getting around it by just calling it like the Rhode Island drill.
Right. He changed the name of the state to a much more passive state. It's the Connecticut drill.
What's the most passive state?
Connecticut.
Is it Connecticut?
Connecticut. It's easily the softest state.
No,
in the
but
union.
There's some hardcore. There's some pretty rough areas in Connecticut.
Yeah, there are, but they're balanced out by an overall culture of softness up there. It's not
no,
I'm
I think Oregon. No,
that.
Oregon's the softest state.
That's true.
Oregon's where like it's almost like. That's one of their chief exports is, you know,
softness.
Laid back South people. Yeah.
Their chief export is softness.
I mean, it would be a lovely place to live because of it, but still.
All right. So those are observations from Texans training camp, day 3 of practice. Man, we got so much more to get into here as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. Seth asked Bill O'Brien a question over the weekend at one of his press conferences that got far and away the most interesting answer from the head coach. We're going to let you hear it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.